Hi, I'm your host, Rick Sessinghaus, and excited to launch Flow Golf Podcast. Each episode, we will share stories, interview experts, and share cutting-edge strategies for peak performance. Here's my co-host, Hallam Morgan, to explain more about Flow Code Golf.
Thanks, Rick. Flow Code Golf is a framework of strategies, principles, and techniques that take us from fear to the state of flow, the state of optimal performance, and the zone where we play our best golf. You can find out more about Flow Code Golf at www.flowcode.golf. And I just want to finish up by saying this podcast is as much your podcast as it is ours. So please ask questions, provide feedback, and get engaged. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Welcome back to the Flow Golf Podcast. Rick, we're here for another episode. Today, I want to talk about skill sets. I want to talk about acquiring skills, which we have spoke a little bit about in the past, but also want to talk about applying those skills to varying different situations. Because Rick, you've had a career of, yes, 28 years of coaching, but you've written a book, you've done huge presentations as a keynote speaker. You've applied your skill sets to so many different places. And I think that's actually something that we have to be able to do in order to achieve success in anything. Because if we think about the game of golf, right, we come across so many different situations. Yes, we can think about the fundamental skills that are required to perform well, but actually it's our ability to apply those skills to these new scenarios that actually enables us to come out a success, enables us to come out with the best score possible. So I want to talk a bit about that and actually start off as well in that space of writing your book, because that's so different to coaching someone one-on-one, for example, which is what I know Sure. You spent a lot of your career doing. So like, how did you navigate that situation? How did you face that new scenario of writing a book that requires potentially new skills, but definitely different application of your current skills? And how did you make a success of that with your book writing and then book launch and everything like that?
Yeah, no, I think it comes back down to when we talk about flow, we talk about skills versus challenge all the time, right? You and I are wanting to challenge our clients, but they have to believe they have the skills to match the challenge. So going back now, it's over almost 17 years ago, I was finishing up my doctoral studies, and I had the choice of doing a research project or writing a book as my final project, and I chose to write a book. Now, at first, it seems it was very, very exciting. Oh my gosh, I get to write a book. And then about 1 week in, it became not so wonderful and exciting. So sometimes we get motivated, and that's great. That gets us started. But the day in and day out skills and tasks that are needed was really put into my face pretty quickly. And so I think that's the same thing with us golfers out there, right? We have some goals out there. We get excited about maybe a club tournament coming up, or maybe we want to qualify for a big tournament. But then we have to look ourselves in the mirror and go, oh, am I good enough for this? Do I have the skills to get into that next level or this different experience, right? And so whether it was me coaching and helping people look at situations differently, and you and I talk a lot about pattern recognition and feedback loops, right? So how quickly can I recognize what's in front of me, in this case, a golf shot, so I can make a good decision and be committed? But that only comes back from a feedback loop, which is failing enough times to know what to do in the next time. Yeah. And there's always this, what am I going to do in this present shot is related to what I've done in the past, right? Now, if we have a good, you and I have talked certainly about growth mindset and learning and asking proper questions, I think that sets the stage for acquiring skills in the future. But you need to know what the skills you need. So I was a speech communication major in my first degree. So I felt I could speak correctly and succinctly, but now writing was a whole different ballgame. Yeah. And writing and looking at it and go, whoa, wow. Is that even make sense? Is that proper grammar? Is that, I mean, it was, and so I was stuck a lot through that process. The other thing is what your first goal or your first plan is, be adaptable, that may not be ultimately where it goes. So I was super excited, like, I'm going to make the greatest mental game book of all time. And oh my gosh, it's going to be 400 pages long. And then I looked at the mirror one day, I go, who the heck wants to read that? And I then said, you know what, let's write a book for beginner and intermediate golfers on the basics of the mental game, and really help educate all golfers, all levels that, hey, there's a mental game out there. Let's define it. Let's train it. Let's use it as now a skill set. And once I got very clear on the framework I wanted to go with, it did make writing easier. I'm not saying it was easy, but it was easier. So I had to get very, very clear on an intention, very, very clear on a goal, very clear now on an outline and a structure. And before you knew it, I had a big, big goal now being broken down into multiple smaller goals. That's what helped me tremendously. Just like with golfers, hey, I want to improve my index by 4 shots next year. How are we going to do it a month from now, a week from now, today? So we break down these big goals into smaller tasks. I learned that very quickly with the book. I had a big outline, and then chapter one was going to be outlined, and I used bullet points. And then before you know it, I'm writing my first paragraph. Awesome. I'm creating momentum going forward. So that's one part, is everybody is obviously have clear goals that are broken down to manageable tasks that I can do in this moment. That's the first thing I learned. The other thing, and this is kind of beyond, well, this is beyond golf, because when I was writing a book, it was very, very vulnerable. I'm going to write something that's going to be published. People are going to look at it. They're going to judge it. They're going to say, hey, I like it, or I don't like it, or this is wrong, or this is right. And that was tough for me to write and stuff. When we're out on the golf course, sometimes we feel vulnerable on the first tee. People are going to judge us. Oh, I hope they like my golf swing. I hope I don't mess up. So to me, writing a book was extremely vulnerable. And I was exposing myself to judgments and stuff like that. So that was a challenge writing, because now I'm getting in the way of my creative process and being super critical. And is this good or not? You and I both know that in a flow mindset, we are not judging ourselves. We're not critical. We're just in the present moment. We're allowing ourselves to be creative. We're allowing ourselves to be expressive. We're allowed to be in the present moment. So I had my ebbs and flow of being in a flow state and being completely out of a flow state writing a book, just like on the golf course where I've been in a flow state. And then when I get self-critical of how my swing is and what other people are thinking about me and oh my gosh, I need to do this, you know, so that was challenging to say the least. On a slightly different note, you know, those golf coaches out there, what this book did was help clarify my coaching philosophy. I think sometimes in this day and age, now again, this, I wrote this 17 years ago, creating your own now coaching philosophy wasn't talked about as much now then, but I think it's vital for coaches to get really clear on what they're about, what are the messages that are going to be consistent as they go out there. And same thing with you golfers, is get real clear on what type of player you are, get real clear on what your skills are, get real clear on who's going to show up that day. Is as vital. So I'm going to catch a breath here. So that's my first kind of intro, kind of to the starting of writing the book.
No, I love it. And I love how we can even create this connection between writing a book and playing golf. And that's what I'm so passionate about, is spotting all of these connections of dots and actually understanding that there are certain things that are just fundamental to any success in any area of your life, no matter what it is. And I remember so many stories of, and I think it was Kobe Bryant. He was known as like a serial cold caller, where he would literally just call random people up and ask them questions. And one of them was someone called Arianna Huffington, owner of the Huffington Post. And people ask questions like, why were you calling Arianna Huffington for advice about your basketball? And he was like, well, because she's a leader. She's a leader, very successful leader. And actually the principles she applies to run a successful business like the Huffington Post, I can apply on the court. And actually he would go on like long walks, and he would take kind of information and stuff from nature as well, because he believed that he could learn from absolutely anyone. And the same principles that were being applied in all these other areas could also apply onto the basketball court. And I believe that's one of the most important things to believe and to remember and to have a perspective on, because we can learn from anyone and everything. And if we just understand and we start to map out, i.e. we build our own philosophy on what we feel creates success for us, then you'll start to notice that actually that success philosophy is applicable to all different areas, whether it's writing a book, playing golf, having a successful relationship, being a good parent, all these different areas. There's some core things that ultimately stay the same no matter what. I had one question, Rick, based on what you said. I wanted to go back on it. You said that you felt obviously vulnerable writing the book, but then ultimately launching the book. And as you said, I mean, first tee nerves. I mean, if I put into Google right now how to get rid of first tee nerves, it's probably one of the most searched golf questions out there. Apart from how do I fix my slice? That's probably the next one. But
yes.
First tee nerves, that is this element of like, I'm being vulnerable. I'm putting myself on show in front of other people. And I could potentially embarrass myself. So it's the same feeling. So my question would be, because we may be able to get some interesting stuff from it, but what did you do to overcome or to navigate or to cope with that vulnerability and that kind of fear of putting out your philosophy to the world and having people critique it and all that kind of stuff? Thank you for listening to this episode of the Flow Golf Podcast. Whether you're a coach or a golfer, we have something for everyone at Flow Code Golf Academy. I'm so excited to announce that Rick Sessinghouse has launched two new masterclasses that you can access for free. One for a coach on how to grow your coaching business, and another for golfers on how to master your mental game. To gain free access, you just need to head to flowcode.golf/masterclasses. We look forward to welcoming you to the Flow Code family.
Yeah, no, I think going back to when we call about skill acquisition, I did have to, as the writing was going along, is be honest with where my skills were. And I feel like I am an average writer. And so I needed to, once that first, let's say, chapter rough draft was completed, I had to read it and go, okay, it's still not where I want it to go. Now, I could keep working on my own writing, fine. But I decided to hire an editor at that time who was not going to give me ideas necessarily of what to write, but more of how to write. Yeah. And so I hired an editor. And then also through that whole process, my father, who I respected on his view, he would read along too. And with those combinations of getting a different perspective, my dad was at that time, I think a 12 handicap. So he got that perspective. And then you get an editor who was a golfer, but he was literally trained in journalism. And so now I'm getting a different perspective that gets me out of my head a little bit in a good way. And because it could be exposing something like, hey, Rick, you got a blind spot on this particular chapter. I'm not sure what you meant here. Oh, that's what I meant. Okay. And so it was being open to feedback. It was hiring somebody who could get my skills higher, right? And then it gets back to that. I'm going to keep saying feedback loop. I would write a chapter. I would read it over myself. I would then give it to the editor. I would give it to my dad. And there was a constant, so that first chapter might have been written six different times or six updated times. Right. And so I think that was part of me feeling more and more secure that it was moving in the right direction. I think the other part when we talk about motivation and goals is, I was not going to allow fear of what other people thought to get in the way of my passion of sharing what I feel was going to help people. And so that's really ultimately what led to finishing it and putting it out there and being proud of it and understanding it wasn't going to be perfect. And not that I'm a perfectionist, but when you put something down on paper, everybody, and it's there and it's published and you can't necessarily do a rewrite 2 months later because it's published, that's vulnerable. So I had to say, it's not going to be perfect. There was typos in it that we find out later. Fine. There was things that now I look back and go, I probably would have said it differently. Fine. But I think that's the same thing with prepping for a tournament. Everybody thinks, well, I'll be ready when. No, sometimes you just got to show up to the first tee. And some good things are going to happen. Some things bad things are going to happen. I get that. But I think it's allowing ourselves to that it's not going to be perfect. You're going to learn. You're going to move from it. But I'm proud that even though I had some fears and some anxieties and some what are people going to think, that my passion of letting this information out was really where my alignment was, is that I loved sharing, just like you golfers out there love playing golf. Let's get connected to why you're teeing it up on the first tee.
Love it. Now, something you mentioned there, and I kind of want to summarize it, but almost like your mission or your why was stronger than the fear of putting it out, right? The fear of what other people would think. So you wanted to help others was the ultimate thing. Is you genuinely believed deep down and you knew that it would help a lot of other people. So it had to go out. No matter if we had some portion of people that disagreed or had their own opinions or critiqued it, you believed that there were a huge number of people that could benefit from it. And I guess the other part of it was also that that entire process, that entire, as you said, writing of the book helped you get clarity on your philosophy. And therefore, regardless of whether anyone else liked the book or not, you had got so much more clarity, and it helped your coaching when it came to the one-on-one coaching, when it came to even giving speaking engagements, presentations and stuff, it helped you describe and tell the story of your philosophy. So it's kind of the same thing when someone considers their golf game. If you do have fear, if you do feel very vulnerable when you're on that first tee, understand what you're actually doing there. Why are you there? What's your mission? Is it all for yourself? Is it for others? Is it for, ask those questions, because if you can make that stronger than the fear that you feel, then in that moment when you feel the fear, you can remind yourself of why you're there. And hopefully that can help you on that path towards a little bit more. Not even, we're not necessarily saying you move directly from fear straight to flow necessarily, but at least you can move from fear to a bit more neutrality, a little bit more kind of acceptance, which is a powerful move in itself.
Yes. And we know with flow is that those that are in a flow state are intrinsically motivated. They are doing it for the love of the actual event or experience or performance. And there were times writing the book where, especially like the emotions chapter, because that was something that if I went back in time, if I had a mental game coach, I would have wanted that chapter. Because I was a hothead and frustrated and stuff, and I did not know how to deal with it back playing college golf. So when I was writing that chapter, I felt like I was in more of a flow state, because it was something that was really a purpose of mine. Hey, I want to help those junior golfers, those college players, those frustrated golfers get more joy out of the game, or be just more neutral after a bad shot and not be miserable and stuff like that. So there were connections within the writing that I was in a flow state, and there's other times there was not. Just like on the golf course, there's certain shots I can't wait to hit. There's others like, oh crap, I don't like this one. But I'm very much into that intrinsic motivation, purpose and passion and curiosity are igniters for our performance. And when we get aligned with why we're doing it, it really does sometimes break through some of the, what we're supposed to do. We find ways to do it, but we got to get started. And a lot of those players out there that have big goals with their golf games, stuff like that, you got to get started. And why are you doing it? I would hope it's not just for extrinsic reasons. And I hope people like me, and I hope people think I'm a great golfer, and, you know, I'm going to get a lot of money if I'm in and win these tournaments. That's nice. Don't get me wrong. But I think day in and day out, to deal with what's required to be at that level, you definitely need to be intrinsically motivated. And it could be, for me, curiosity and service are my two values. If I'm curious about something and I want to add value and service others, man, I'm connected. I'm ready to go.
Yeah. And that's, I guess, why writing a book made so much sense, right? Because if I think about your two values of being curious and also being of service, well, I almost can't think of many more things better than having to do research and write a book and all that, and then publish it out to the world. I can't think of something, or there are a few things, but not many things that would be better in being aligned with those values. So that's fantastic.
And so now, I mean, the book's completed. I'm proud of the book. You go back and maybe I make some adjustments, and that leads to, you know, the next book that I'm writing, which now you're looking at, just like we have another round of golf, or we have another tournament, or we have another, you know, we're looking forward to something else. And this book has been in my mind for about 6 years, and I'm moving on it. And yet I look back at the other book, and I look at where I want it to go, and I understand my skill sets are not good enough. And so in this case, I have a book coach, and I have somebody who I actually speak with every single week, and who actually helps me create and gives me prompts to think about, and hey, how would you do this? And it's been just so enlightening for me to go to another level as a writer and to share content. And it's a slower process than the first book, but my skills are improving, and the stories I'm telling, and the refinement is there. So that's where I'm at right now in my life. Okay. And we're going to see what goes from here and here and here. It's the same thing with Flow Code. You and I are passionate about creating content to help people, and our content is shifting, and we're going to be adding more and stuff like that. But it's constantly saying, where am I at and where do I want to go? And that gap it's going to require a lot of hard work, but we want it to be effective, efficient work. So that's why me having a book coach who is at my side every single day and every single week is going to help me get to my goal sooner, but not only sooner, but I'm going to be better after this process.
Of course. Now, I was going to ask that question because, and I think that ties into it, but hopefully there's a few other things, because similar to someone's golf game, right? It's not, we hope it's kind of like this. We hope it's like this gradual kind of steady incline, but we know it's kind of up and down, up and down, up and down. And hopefully we're trending kind of upwards. That's where we want to go. And I'd imagine it's the same when you're writing your book. You have some days where you're like, oh, like this is, I'm all in, this is great, this is going really well. And then other days, probably you're a little bit more down in that trough where you're kind of like, this isn't quite going to plan today. This just, my mind's not working, I'm not getting creative and all that kind of stuff. And actually it's understanding and accepting that that's the way that we work as humans, right? We aren't robots, we are human. We have emotions, we feel negative emotions, we feel positive emotions, like we feel all these different things. And it's understanding there is going to be this up and down. So my question would be, one, like, how did you find accepting that there was this up and down, and not almost like expecting it just to be this constant, I get better every time I sit down and write, all of a sudden it's easy. How did you find accepting that? Because you could have got, I guess, and I'd love to hear, I don't know the answer, I haven't written a book, but let's say it took you, I'm making it up, how long did it take you to write your book, the first one?
Probably about 9 months.
9 months. So let's say like when you got to month seven, I'm assuming it wasn't all plain sailing even at month seven. There were probably still some days where you're like, almost like you have maybe one of your worst days writing at month seven. So it's not, when we talk about skill acquisition, it's still not, oh, I acquire the skills and my skill gets slightly better, 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 better. And it's this constant incline. Actually is this still this up and down. So one, how did you find accepting that? Because I think that's really important part of the process for golfers. And then number two, like what did you do when you realized that you were in those troughs to kind of start that upward trend back and get back into a creative state? Because I think, in my opinion, they're the two of the most important things from a golfer's standpoint is like, one, accepting that, look, I'm not always going to be at the peaks and I'm not going to continue this, but also understanding that, well, when I'm in the trough, it's fine because I know what to do to get out of it.
Yeah. And the answer is going to be similar to both of those questions. So when I look at, let's say writing a book, or this current book is challenging for me, but it's very fulfilling, is I look at even our golf games, right? Is I've looked at my golf game of when I started golf when I was 12 years old to being an average Division I player, within about 7 years. But in the moment when you're not playing well, when you're, you look back, oh, I am not good. I can't believe. So one of the exercises I used to do, and I still do with my coaching clients, is look back, and it's kind of like a long-winded confidence resume. Literally point out when you started golf, where you are, and you're going to track that you are moving in the right direction. There's now bumps week to week. I get it. But if you look at the big, big picture, I was moving forward. Okay. And so I like to look back sometimes to get a perspective of, wow, right now doesn't feel good, but I have come from there to there to there. And that has helped me from a perspective standpoint first. And I think that has now helped me on a day-to-day standpoint to know that it will get better if, here's the big if, I ask the proper questions to shift that. So I learned a lot with some other flow training of flow comes from struggle. So allowing myself to struggle is actually one of the first things in flow. Yeah. So with writing, this sounds simple, it's not easy, but it's, you're going to write no matter what. And it may be the crappiest stuff you've ever, and you're not going to publish it. You're not even going to send it to anybody, but you're getting it started. And then what happens is that the critical voice shuts off in the brain. And now we get more subconscious. And then we literally get into a flow for 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes. And we go, oh, wow, that's gold. Now, the first part's crap. Okay. But understanding there is a process that goes from struggle to release to flow.
Love it.
But not a lot of people want to do the struggle part. Okay. Not a lot of wanted people who are slicing the ball on the tee want to go to the range and work on it and work it out. And then, the last ball, they go, oh, I got it. I found it. Right. And then we go, oh my God, now golf's great. But you had to go through the struggle to get to the higher level, right? And skill acquisition is, we are always up leveling those skills, but in order to up level, you had to struggle first. So that's what I've learned the most in this process is, me writing doesn't mean that 500 words that my goal is for the day is going to be published, anybody's going to see. But I have to go through the crappy 500 words to get to maybe 200 words that are really good. That's, I'm telling you, that's challenging, but you do it enough times to trust that there's a process of struggle and then that gets to flow. That's when people, I want them to embrace. You and I talk about being anti-fragile and grit and perseverance. Well, that's part of struggle, but it's literally doing the action and you're struggling and knowing that there is a light at the end of the tunnel if you trust the process.
Absolutely. No, I love that. And essentially understanding that struggle is the precursor for flow. That allows you to kind of not, you don't have to enjoy the struggle, right? You don't have to be like, oh, love the struggle, love the struggle, love the struggle. But actually just accepting the struggle and saying, you know what, this is a part of, and actually, arguably, the most exciting time, because you know you're on this upward trend towards maximum flow, towards your state of flow, towards your optimal performance. So actually looking at struggle slightly differently is really, really important. And I think having a different perspective, that's super powerful. I love that.
And along those lines too, is back to our original idea of feedback loop, is as I struggle more and get into flow, I then look back at what was the interference that caused the struggle. And then that shrinks the struggle phase a little bit more. I'm telling you right now, from a book standpoint and playing golf, my interference was too analytical, trying to do everything just perfectly. My golf swing has to be at certain angles. And being vulnerable of how am I going to look to others, right? That potential embarrassment, that potential, oh, I hope my swing looks good to other people. I hope other people think I'm good. I hope this chapter, that people like my chapter. Once I got past some of these judgments and critical and stuff, wow, I was much more intentional. And I found myself, again, my performance improving.
Love that. Love that. So you can shrink the struggle phase, right? The same way you can extend the flow phase, the same way you can extend that, we can also shrink the struggle phase. The struggle phase will still be there. We still need some struggle.
Correct.
But actually the length of it, we can expand or shrink. And I think that's actually really
right. But if we're noticing that the same interference triggers are causing the struggle and we haven't learned strategies to minimize those, that to me is not a proper feedback loop. Okay. If I'm doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result, we know that's definition of insanity, right? But if I can look back and go, oh, why am I having so much challenge writing today? And my self-critical voice goes, oh, because you're trying to be perfect again. And you want this, okay, come on, screw it. Let's go. Let's write. Or I'm on the first tee and I'm going, oh, I wonder how these people think about it. Screw it. Let's hit that damn drive over to that palm tree, the little cut, right? We can make these shifts, but we have to be aware of those thinking processes first. And I think when you struggle enough, you start to look at patterns on that end. But on the other end, you and I talk a lot about when you are in a flow state, what was the triggers that got you in that too? Let's repeat that. Let's learn from success as much as we're learning from the struggle.
Definitely. Definitely. No, I love that. And the final thing I want to go into a bit more detail on, because I think it's so relevant to the game of golf. You mentioned, obviously, now you're kind of in the process of writing your second book. And what you've done differently this time is you've brought on a book coach. And actually, even in the first time you wrote your book, you brought other people on to kind of support you on that journey, because you understood that it is such a big journey and there are so many skills that you're going to have to acquire, so many new things that you haven't experienced before, that ultimately there's going to be some blind spots, right? And you need trusted people in your team to help you on that journey to get you to that point of success. So it couldn't be more relevant to golf, right? We understand that the importance of having people in your team that can bring that different perspective and spot things that you don't see, to spot the skills that maybe you need to acquire or the mistakes that you're making so as we can learn from them and all that kind of stuff. So can you just talk about how that kind of connects to golf and people's experience
Sure.
on the golf course as well?
No, and so I'll talk the book thing first. So my first book, I'm proud of it, and I call it kind of an intermediate level book on the mental game. Is more textbook looky, right? Here's the steps to do this, steps to do this. Now, my book coach now said, hey, Rick, I read that book and it's good, it's fine. But what you're telling me you want in the second book, that's not going to be good enough anymore. And so this coach now understands I, as a writer, need to improve my storytelling skills, and I need to improve a little more of my research, and I need to improve my voice throughout, being consistent, right? So we had a very clear understanding of what are the skills I need to up level. He, as my coach, is going to give me prompts, give me journal stuff to do, ask me questions. Awesome. Golf-wise, A lot of people say, I want to be a better golfer. Well, what the heck does that mean? Let's say, hey, I want to get 5 shots better. Awesome. How are you going to get there? People then really don't have an idea. But let me give you an example, like with short game, for instance. If somebody's a 10 handicap and they have this awesome dream of being a scratch player, probably one of their blind spots is short game and be able to hit a flop shot and be able to hit different clubs around it. Now, they may have not even know they need those skills yet, right? So now you go to a coach and say, hey, coach, I am super motivated to go from a 10 handicap to a zero. How can you help? And they're saying, hey, hit a few shots around the short game area. And you go, oh, we got some work to do. You didn't even know you needed the skills, right? So a proper coach is going to help you expose some of those blind spots, whether it's you don't have certain shots around the green, whether it's you not having a clear game plan when you go play and you can play to your strengths better. And I mean, the list goes on of what are the skills that we need in golf, both physical, technical, literally physical fitness, the mental side, is that a good coach is going to help create a plan, but ask you the proper questions. But you, I call it the reality check. You as the golfer has to have a reality check. Why am I not at a zero right now? Why am I not at whatever goal it is? And being honest with yourself is great. Have that awareness. Then you are going to ask people who have either been there or coaches who can help you get there. So it's a process of have a reality check, and then you can also have other people give you a reality check pretty quickly.
And having that open path of communication is important, so as people can give you that honest reality check as well. So no, I absolutely love that. And people probably, I'm not sure what we'll title this yet, but they may see the title, they may hear the start where we're talking about Rick being an author and talking about books, and it's like, what? This is the Flow Golf podcast. But the message here really is that we can learn from every single situation, every single circumstance, and every single kind of thing that we do in life and other people do in life, because there are these fundamentals that ultimately we're performing. You're performing as an author, you're performing as a coach, you're performing as a golfer. And these kind of key elements for performance are similar no matter what you're doing. So I really want people to take that message away and understand when they are listening to this podcast, even if they're not a full-time golfer, even if they are kind of a weekend golfer, they can take some of the stuff we're talking about here that might be golf specific, but they can apply that to their job. They can apply that to their relationships. They can apply that to their finances even to some extent. So once you start to, and I actually get really kind of addicted to this thing of like, well, what certain things are like common no matter what I apply it to? So can I apply that concept to my finances? Can I apply that concept to my relationship? And actually, like, some of them would be compound interest, for example. Compound interest is something that I understand can be applied to no matter what it is in my life, and it will benefit it. If I understand that in the financial world, it's where we talk about it, makes sense. If I apply it to my personal development, wow, again, it makes sense. If I apply it to my relationships, wow, it makes sense. My girlfriend might say I need to apply it a bit more, but anyway. But in all these different aspects, we understand that these frameworks can apply in all of them. And that's actually really exciting when you figure out some of these frameworks can apply in all aspects. Another one being flow code, right? Flow code is another one that can be applied in all aspects.
Exactly. And you and I are going to be going down and talking a lot about that in future podcasts and a lot of other content is back to these frameworks and these structures. And these are fundamentals. You know, your ability to focus in the present moment is vital. I don't care if it's on the first tee or writing a book or giving a sales presentation. Flow follows focus. You got to be focused. You got to manage your energy. There's tons and tons of things that are going to help us throughout. And I just feel golf is just an awesome vehicle for us to train it in. And then knowing those principles can help us in all areas of our life.
Love it. Love it. Great episode, Rick. Really enjoyed that. And we'll catch you all in the next one. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Flow Golf Podcast. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe. And as always, please reach out if you have any feedback or suggestions that we can implement to bring more value to our community. Community plays a huge role in what we do at Flow Code Golf Academy, and we're passionate about creating a group of like-minded coaches and golfers who want to improve their mental game and help others do the same. I'm also excited to announce that Dr. Rick Sessinghouse has launched 2 new masterclasses that you can gain free access to. He's created one for coaches on how to grow your coaching business and another for golfers on how to master your mental game. You can gain free access now by heading to www.flowcode.golf/masterclasses, and we look forward to welcoming you to the Flowcode family.